Over the weekend, communities around the world gathered for the Easter and Passover holidays. But in Sri Lanka, Easter Sunday took a tragic turn in a series of bombings carried out at multiple churches and hotels across the country.
One man, in fact, recalls seeing who he later saw on the news was able to confirm was one of the suicide bombers. He described being at Easter Mass with his family and then noticing this man sort of from the corner of his eye with a very, very large backpack walking really briskly down the aisle of the church. And seconds later, he heard this explosion and it was just chaos thereafter.
That's Emily Schmall, South Asia correspondent for the Associated Press, and she's been reporting from the Sri Lankan capital city of Colombo. At least 290 people have been reported dead and roughly 500 injured in the attacks. And among those killed, more than 39 were from countries outside of Sri Lanka, including the United States, the UK, and India. The exact motives behind the attack are still being determined, but on Monday, Sri Lanka's government said the attacks were carried out by 7 different suicide bombers, all Sri Lankan nationals. The government has also said that the attacks were coordinated by a radical Islamic terrorist group called the National Tawhid Jamaat. Following the bombing, Sri Lankan officials have admitted that some members of their government were warned of a possible attack being planned by the group earlier this month.
The health minister today said that as of April 4th, a number of intelligence reports from intelligence agencies around the world had been shared with some members of Sri Lanka's government, its head of police, for example. And in these documents that warned of a possible attack, this group's name was mentioned. But for some reason, this intelligence didn't reach the highest echelons of government in Sri Lanka.
The country is almost 10 years removed from a 26-year-long civil war between the Sri Lankan government and the separatist Tamils, a minority ethnic group. These attacks do not appear to be connected to the ethnic conflicts that marked the country's decades-long war, but they do come as a painful reminder of the violence that was once part of daily life on the island.
Sri Lankans, by and large, believe that the war days were behind them. I don't really see this provoking more divisiveness, at least among the general public. However, with some members of the government implying that perhaps other members of the government didn't share intelligence widely enough, it's made it much harder for the political leadership to sort of coalesce. And I don't see this incident improving the situation at all.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. For more on what the deadly bombings in Sri Lanka mean for a country less than 10 years removed from civil war, I spoke with Neil Devota. He's a professor of politics and international affairs at Wake Forest University, focusing on South Asia politics. Neil is originally from Sri Lanka, and he told me what he's been hearing from friends and family since these attacks took place.
Absolute disbelief, because Christian churches were not targeted even during the civil war. The LTT, which was the group that fought to create a separate state for the Tamils in the north and northeast of the country, did attack mosques in the eastern province. But churches, Catholic churches, Christian churches were never attacked. So it's absolute sheer disbelief on the part of everybody I know.
And Christians make up a little less than 8% of Sri Lanka's population. What is life like for Christians in the country? Is there discrimination?
Not really. There has been discrimination against evangelical groups, and some of these groups have been targeted by extremist Buddhist forces. There has been some intimidation over the years against Catholics as well, but for the most part, Catholics especially have gotten along quite well. So this was not so much an issue. It was more of an issue between Buddhists and Muslims in the last maybe 5 or 6 years. So as to why these attacks took place in Christian churches is the biggest question that people are trying to answer. And it doesn't seem to me that anyone's come up with, you know, a definitive logical answer to what happened on Easter Sunday.
The Sri Lankan government, Neil, is saying that Muslim extremists were behind these attacks. But have these groups been a threat in Sri Lanka before?
No. Thus far, one of the nagging questions has been why there was no extremist response to some of the attacks the Muslims have experienced starting in 2014. There was an attack on a Muslim settlement in 2014. There were also anti-Muslim riots last year in March. And there was no radical Muslim response. And so this has caught everybody off guard. I suppose it was a matter of time before some of the more extremist elements within the Muslim community retaliated. This seems to be connected to a group called the Tawheed Jamaat, which has a fairly strong presence in Tamil Nadu. That's the state in southern India. And at this point, we do not know what sort of links may have existed between the Tawheed Jamaat in Tamil Nadu and the Tawheed Jamaat in Sri Lanka. But this takes the political situation in Sri Lanka to a whole different level. The scale of the attacks, the coordination, this is unlike anything the country has seen. And this is a country that is used to experiencing suicide bombings, but not at this level of coordination, not at this scale, close to 300 people killed, maybe 500 injured, which suggests that the number of casualties could be even higher.
We also know that hotels were impacted by this bombing. Hotels were also bombed. Let's talk a little bit about the motivation behind that. My understanding is these were five-star hotels. What could have been the motivation for why those were targeted?
All three hotels are five-star upscale hotels located fairly close to each other. And if the attacks are in retaliation for what's happened to the Muslim community in the last, 4 to 5 years, and that is what some of the pro-ISIS groups are claiming on social media from what I'm being told, then the bombings in the hotels kind of make sense. This is a response to trying to, make things harder for the economy, cripple the tourism industry and the like. But it still does not explain why a Muslim minority would go against, a Christian minority. Both groups have faced, some discrimination at the hands of the majority Buddhist community over the years. So the hotel bombings do make sense at some level, but not the bombings against the churches.
We also know that Sri Lankan government officials had been warned of a possible attack by the Tawheed Jamaat. What is the situation now?
The government was warned, it turns out, by the Indians, and the warning was sent out on April 11th by the Inspector General of Police. But that intelligence was not shared with the Prime Minister and the Cabinet, and this has to do with some of the tensions that exist between the Prime Minister and the President. The President, it appears, was aware, but the Prime Minister has not been invited to National Security Council meetings in the last few months, given the tense relationship that exists between the two parties. And so this, in that sense, is an intelligence failure, because they knew well ahead of time that the Tawheed Jamaat was planning attacks against Christian churches. So the intelligence was that specific. And so there's bound to be some fallout as a result of, this intelligence failure.
The Sri Lankan authorities have shut down social media following the bombings. And we spoke to the Associated Press reporter Emily Schmall, who told us a little bit about that decision. Let's take a listen.
People are a bit frustrated because, of course, like everywhere, people are accustomed to sharing news on places like Facebook and WhatsApp. And these two social networks in particular have been difficult, if not impossible, to access for most people. On the other hand, I think, the Sri Lankan government is making a statement here by shutting down these networks, saying essentially that they don't really trust these companies to act responsibly.
Neil, a couple questions there. I mean, first of all, what's your take on the social media blackout, the absolute shutdown of social media?
Well, this is understandable given what happened in March last year, where Sinhalese Buddhist extremist groups were coordinating through social media attacks against, the Muslim community. And this went on, I think, for about 3 days. And since then, there's been quite a bit of criticism against Facebook and other groups, claiming that they were not monitoring and shutting down hate speech and the like quickly enough. And so I can see why the government felt like it had to do this. Given what happened last year, I think it was a responsible move. At the same time, I can understand how frustrated people are, because I myself could not get in touch with friends. Having grown up close to this church that was bombed in Colombo, I had ample reason to want to make sure that, you know, friends were safe, and I could not get through to them via social media. So I understand the frustration people are experiencing. But at the same time, I can see why the government felt they had to do this. And I can assure you, given what's floating around among some Sri Lankans outside of Sri Lanka, that once this ban is removed, you're going to see quite a bit of hate speech on social media.
So then the question becomes, what will Sri Lanka look like? Will it go back to high security measures after these attacks, after shutting down Facebook, after the number of deaths that it's seen? Do you suspect security in Sri Lanka, both online and offline, to increase in the future?
I think it will. Certainly, you'll see a much higher security presence all over the country, not unsimilar to what existed during the war. It's been extremely easy to access places like hotels, which had pretty high security during the war. But this is a game changer in many ways. But what scares me and what really worries me is what this means for the Muslim community in Sri Lanka going forward, because it's going to be a tough scene for them, because there's always been an eddy of anti-Muslim sentiment in the country that was masked by the civil war. And it was no accident that we saw this anti-Muslim rhetoric and anti-Muslim incidents take place after the civil war ended. And so this Islamophobia trending globally is going to resonate all the more in Sri Lanka, I think, as a result of what's happened.
Neil Devoda is a professor of politics and international affairs at Wake Forest University. Thank you, Neil.
You're very welcome.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.